I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, coming to you live from the far-off year of 2010. I am your host, Bob Stochastic Mackey, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Look at this license. I'm Muhammad Jafar. No, I'm Henry Gilbert.
Hello. I knew it. Who else?
Double feature of Octopussy, Chris Antista.
Oh, I loved Octopussy. I saw it twice. Who else?
Sweet Maiden of the Spit, Cat Bailey.
That's right. Cat is back. Woo! Due to popular demand. And today's episode is Lisa's Wedding.
Hold my finger.
Right now? Move the mics, everybody. Today's episode aired on March 19th, 1995. And as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
Bobby Madonna's Take a Bow continues its seven-week journey on the top of the singles charts. It is a great week to own a Game Boy. This week, bookended with Mario Picross and Kirby's Dream Land 2, and Chris Farley and David Spade make their big screen starring debut with Tommy Boy, and a little boy named Chris Antista turns 15 years old.
Happy birthday, Chris. Did you see Tommy Boy on your birthday?
I was grounded, and I snuck out of the house, and I saw that, and I saw the movie I'll talk about in the next episode.
Oh, boy.
We talked about Tommy Boy on Talking Critic, but I have a real soft spot for that movie.
It's fucking great.
I mean, Black Sheep sucks because it is just Tommy Boy with different jokes, but Tommy Boy is very sweet and it has some great Farley stuff in it too.
If you want to get real mad, you should see the pop figures they just revealed that look like absolutely nothing. God. If you don't have the box logo, you would have no idea what it is because you cannot make a pop as big as Chris Farley.
So it's like the Big Bang Theory pop figures.
They're even
anything
worse.
With normal humans. It's like, it's a guy in a red shirt.
I love his relationship with his dad in that movie, in Tommy Boy. It's really sweet. And
Brian Dennehy.
Yeah, Brian Dennehy,
right?
Who still alive, outlived Chris Farley by a long time.
Jesus Christ.
But he dies in the film. Just him and David Spade. But once he's gone, you're like, David Spade, you needed Chris Farley.
He really did.
To
seem
you.
Interesting.
Unless I told you what these were, you would have no idea that these are Tommy Boy pop figures. They're just, which white guy do you want?
They can't spare the extra plastic for a Farley
figure.
Yeah,
I know.
Bob's greatest achievement at US Gamer was writing that Down with Funko Pops article.
That's right, and I was proven correct. Everyone
said
I was crazy.
Which periodically pops up on our traffic feed, by
really?
The way.
Really? Okay,
yeah,
I want
still
residuals.
Does.
I demand residuals. So this episode, it is an Emmy-winning episode.
Yeah.
Super
yes, it
important.
Is.
It's rightfully. Also the first look into the future. The first episode-long look into the future. But I also want to say, it is the first really fan-servicey episode of The Simpsons. Like, you need to come into this episode with existing knowledge to get all of the references that happen in the future, to understand why it's funny that certain things happen to certain characters. So
yeah.
I feel like this is really the first one just for the fans.
And that it's fan fiction-y, too. Like,
yeah.
It is a made-up... All stories are imaginary, but this is an imaginary story of what Lisa's future would be. And they've done a lot of future episodes since that undo this one, which I don't like.
Taking
well,
I know what you're going to say.
The biggest one was recently, or in the last decade, they did one called Christmases Past, where it was a Christmas far off in the future where Lisa's married to Milhouse and her daughter won't listen to her. And then they even did a sequel one to that a couple years ago that followed that timeline, thus making it the most official of the futures yet because it continued it. And for one thing, I don't like that they couple her with Milhouse, which this episode does the opposite of.
He is a balding adult loser with a child's voice.
Yes. And also, yes, that he... That this one gives a lot more openness. It is a continuation of their stories, but it lets all of them keep living. Mm-hmm. But I love this episode. But Kat, you insisted. You made us have a girl on this episode.
This is affirmative action.
But this is one of your favorites. Why is that?
Well, it's a Lisa episode.
I have a real soft spot for future episodes, but this is... At its heart, a great Lisa episode.
Yeah, and I think the key to this being Emmy Gold is that it's a James L. Brooks idea that was written by Greg Daniels, one of the best writers on The Simpsons, co-creator of King of the Hill, by the way.
Not unlike Mr. Bergstrom, one of my favorite episodes of all time.
In fact, I was reading up on this episode, and people were observing that it kind of bookends Lisa's Substitute in a lot of respects, in the sense that, and maybe we can get into this a little more
that
deeply.
That Mr. Bergstrom
was
right about everything?
Well, there are a lot of parallels. Maybe we should leave that till the end of the episode.
Okay,
So to go over the other Emmy Award-winning episodes so far up to the season, we have Life on the Fast Lane, which was the jock episode, the Lothario bowling instructor, and also Homer versus Lisa in the Eighth Commandment. ones
Another
that didn't
Lisa
win were Radio Bart's. And I can't remember the
they
other one.
They were so pissed off on the commentary they didn't win with Radio Bart.
I think season three Radio Bart was nominated. And
they lost to Will Vinton's Claymation.
Easter. Yeah, and I think season five they nominated Treehouse of Horror 4, which is one of the best looking episodes ever.
I'm so not surprised this one got that actually won the Emmy, because it's really nice. It's the Lisa and Homer having a good moment, really pulls at the heartstrings, the kind of thing that you can totally run a highlight from and people go, oh.
Yeah, and I wasn't looking for that in The Simpsons when this aired, but at the end of it, it was like, this show is more special than I thought. Like, I don't know. That's as a 15-year-old, I was like, this is better than I think it is. Yeah. Why did they do this? This is so sweet.
It still makes me warm and tingly, and I do like that they chose a specific date, too. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to say 2010, August 1st, 2010. They didn't have to say that, but they made it specifically that, thus making Lisa 23, Bart 25, Maggie 16, Homer late 50s.
Early 50s.
Early 50s.
Yeah, and how do you feel, young people listening, that you're probably older than old Lisa?
Yes. No, I know. We're all older than them.
So, I mean, I assume all of you watched this on August 1st, 2010.
I did. And I tweeted about it, too. It's like, today is Lisa's wedding.
I definitely watched it, and now 2010 feels so long ago.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Well, this entire year has felt like 8 million years long.
We're all dying.
Yes, but 2010 now feels very old. We'll soon be able to watch, like, new sitcoms or comedy shows will do a flashback episode that takes place in 2010, and they'll have specific jokes about it. BoJack Horseman basically did that last season with 2007.
One of my favorite episodes.
Better Call Saul's still doing it.
Wow. Yes. but yeah, I just love that they got specific. But I also love that this episode starts. I remember being so shocked because it was advertised as the future episode. And then it starts with two knights fighting each other, and it's just such a wonderful, distracting opening.
Zounds, I did the mightily smitely. Zounds is a Renaissance English word short for God's wounds, but the smitely, that's pure Flanders.
Please call a doctor.
I never thought of the Ren Fair being set up in opposition to the future stuff, but now that's so great. It's so clever.
Yeah, it's really great. Yeah,
it's a great mystery. This is Merkin and his team. One of their things they're best at is the continual misdirects on the show. And this episode is one of the best ever. They do so many teases of something else. They're like, just kidding. That's not the episode. Like, and that it also makes no sense that Flanders bashed in Smithers' head. Like, he was trying to kill him.
Poor Smithers. There was no safety equipment or anything.
I feel like that's also the only time Smithers and Flanders have ever interacted or something.
I can't think of another
in
way.
In the good seasons, I can't remember anything.
Maybe some deprogramming session at some point.
So did any of you go to the Renaissance Festival?
I've been to a few.
I haven't been in years, but like we were prescribed for school. We the gifted program went to like out of town to the biggest Ren Fair in Florida every year, and it's so rife for jokes.
I mean I
love the Ren Fair.
MST3K poisoned my mind against Ren Fairs because a lot of their early jokes were about how bad Ren Fairs are, how annoying everyone is there.
Which is funny.
I was like, I never want to go to one of these. It sounds so lame.
Which is funny because they're from Minnesota, and Minnesota has a great Renaissance festival. I feel like a lot of people go it. Actually, my partner worked for the Renaissance festival.
Really?
We had a shop there. She wore the bodice and everything.
Oh, had the veiny boobs?
Yes. And
wouldn't be a Ren Fest without
she was a 18-year-old managing a bunch of carnies.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. And they're secretly all carnies.
It's like a sub-county fair, but somehow more respectable.
I mean, the one in Springfield looks really bad. I mean, the one in Minnesota is great.
Like, I loved it.
People get really dressed up for it. The cosplay was a big thing, and you could do fencing. Yeah. But Homer had the right idea. He was eating the huge thing of ham.
Yeah, the suckling pig.
Yeah.
I love those giant turkey legs you get in medieval times.
And this could be only me. Every year, you would dip your hand in wax and make a candle out of it. That's what I did at every Ren Fair.
Oh, I've seen those. I never got to do that, though. Also, Kat, have you seen seen the Trekkies who go to Red Affairs and pretend to be Starfleet people there?
I haven't, but that sounds kind of amazing. Actually.
There's a Mr. Yeah. Show joke about it, but it's based on a very, very real thing. Aha, these Earthlings from the past.
Marge is so good at a loom, by the way.
That's one of my favorite Marge jokes. Hi, Bart, I am weaving on a loom. She uses her loom skills to make the most obvious statement to Bart. Yes. It's not even interesting. It's just like, look what I just did.
It's such a great mom joke.
Every time I teach someone how to use technology and laser time, that's exactly what I do. Well, I am making a test post.
I also think of it, I feel guilty now watching that joke because I was part of my mom. If she showed off a talent, I'd be like, meh. I was part, instead of like, he should be amazed. Looms are really
hard. That shit takes forever. I don't know how Marge did that so quick.
She did it lightning fast. I also did love just the visual of Homer watching the pig turn over. That
and Lunch
great.
Lady Doris appears?
Yeah, she has two appearances in this, which, well, at the same time as she's starring or co-starring in The Critic, she's doing this show still. Even Chief Wiggum's getting in on the joke.
Behold, the rarest of the rare, the mythological two-headed hound, born with only one head. Ooh, and here, out of the mists of history, the legendary Esquilax, a horse with the head of a rabbit and the body of a rabbit. Oh, it's galloping away.
Here, buddy.
Here, Esquilax.
Esquilax is one of those great made-up Simpsons words that sounds like it could be a real thing, but it's not.
It took me into Googling it.
Me too.
Chief Wiggum spent more time thinking of that name than he did at the actual exhibit.
Yeah, this is far too clever for Chief Wiggum, all of these fake animals that are actually real.
Yeah, I like that maybe he is secretly a fantasy dork who loves manticores and griffins and also gluing rainbow wigs to chickens. That beagle design is so cute. Yeah, I love it. I want to snuggle that beagle.
Point out the designs of the animals. It made me feel like this is the first non-Mr. Honey Bunny rabbit on The Simpsons after six seasons. Because it looks so jarring.
They look kind of normal.
Yeah.
As opposed to the animals, for example, that the Simpsons have.
They all have Simpsons overbites.
The purple hamsters from Bart the Genius.
Oh, those purple hamsters, man. And it's also interesting that it is Lisa chasing a rabbit into a mysterious world. So it's a little of Alice in Wonderland.
I'm thinking it's a Blaster Master reference. glad I'm here with all game people.
We got it.
But that's where she meets the fortune teller.
Would you like to know your future?
Sorry, I don't believe in fortune telling. I should go.
What's your hurry? Bart, Maggie, and Marge are at the joust, and Homer is heckling the puppet show.
Wow, you can see into the present.
Now we'll see what the future holds.
The death card?
No, that's good. It means transition, change.
Oh, that's cute.
The happy squirrel.
That's bad.
Possibly. The cards are vague and mysterious. They seem to be revealing the story of your first love.
I like the joke about how the cards can be whatever you want them to be because tarot isn't real.
My girlfriend was really into tarot, and it was impossible to get a beat on.
A lot of people I know have gone through tarot phases, including my partner and many of my friends.
Yeah.
So. I prefer the use of tarot in video games. Like, I'm part of the fool class.
Persona uses it quite well. Mm. But yeah, I like the art in it. I learned a lot about tarot from Alan Moore went through a magic phase that he's still in. Basically, he got crazy into sex magic.
A weird sex wizard now.
Yep, he's a weird sex wizard. Well, and drugs. Weird drugs and sex
wizard. He went through
a
magic phase that he's still in.
Okay. Yeah. You can't be a sex wizard without drugs.
Yeah, I want the happy squirrel in Persona, by the way.
Yes, yes.
And so
I want to bond with that.
Alan Moore did a comic called Promethea, which is amazing. I actually really love it. But six issues of it are just him explaining magic to you. It's like... it's kind of a religious tract, except for magic, and it goes through each card in the tarot deck. And
slow down, Orson Welles.
Yeah.
Pump the brakes.
It gets way more conceptual after that. In the comic Promethea, Alan Moore says you experience the literal apocalypse by reading it, and then it's over. Like, that's how full of himself he is.
Wow.
Anyway, I love that line. You can see into the... present.
I find it interesting that she, like, a lot of the time these charlatans will come up with something really vague to make you think, oh my god, you said something really vague in general. She has very specific information on Lisa. Yes.
She is magic, except I guess she isn't magic because she doesn't disappear into a smoke. Which
it's like that that TV psychic guy who would
John
talk
Edwards.
To yeah, John Edwards. It was the
cold
was
reading.
Cold reading. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like these very obvious things that will lead you to more info about the people.
She then flashes to specifically 2010 and an Eastern University, which, knowing Simpson's history of writers, I think it's got to be Harvard.
Yeah,
this is future Harvard now. Past Harvard, Eastern University, because every Simpsons writer went to Harvard, or most of them did. It's a real fraternity type thing.
She also flies out of Logan Airport later on.
Okay. There's this joke I never even heard of. I've not talked to lots of people who go to Harvard, but comedian Paul F. Tompkins has this joke about how people who went to Harvard always brag of saying, like, I went to a university in Boston. You know, I don't like to brag. It's just an Eastern University. And when they want to brag so hard they went to Harvard. But yes, then we have quite a little meet cute between these two. Oh, no. Sorry, I wanted to say that Tin Man thing. Oh, my. The Tin Man bit was so funny.
Another great mislead.
Mm-hmm. So fucking good. And
I mean, how can you forget In Memory of a Real Tree?
Yes. We still have real trees, though.
Yeah, and no hollow trees yet. Although we have holographic rap stars.
True.
Yeah, they should have predicted holographic rap stars.
The last copy was just signed out by Hugh Parkfield. Oh, there he is.
No! It couldn't be! Phew!
Thanks for holding my book while I tied my shoe.
Oh! That's the book I need. You'll probably take forever with it, too.
I can read faster than you.
I read at a 78th grade level.
Right here.
Reading very fast.
Finish this page.
Ages ago. I'll get a dictionary.
Why?
You'll see when you get there, the word stochastic.
Pertaining to a process involving a randomly determined sequence of observations.
Immediately love.
First they hate each other, now all of a sudden they love each other. Oh, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Of course not, you're a robot.
It's the one of three exploding heads. Exploding
I love
robot
it. I
heads.
Can watch that all day.
Yeah.
Just the way the water leaks out of their eyes and then causes them to die.
They should have fixed that design problem.
I think it's Jim Reardon who did the animation in this episode.
Oh, yeah, he's the director. And yeah. He's the guy you trust. I mean, you have all new designs, all new backgrounds, all new, like, characters are aged in a different way, so.
I just love the implied cruelty that they built robots to die once they feel emotions. If you feel emotions, you die.
It's very dark.
I feel let down. We don't have robots yet? Jeez.
Yeah.
They can't.
We didn't have them in 2010.
Hello, Osimo.
They're moving.
Roombas.
They're moving on those sex robots. They're getting closer.
Yeah, you've got to see my Hatchimal.
So this meet cute is totally a reference to Love Story from 1970.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah,
which I've never seen, would not know about if not for Kid Stays in the Pictures.
It caused quite the sensation back in 1970.
All of our parents had sex from that movie, probably.
It caused my wife to leave me.
Robert Evans. I didn't watch that movie either. It's Love.
Definitely before my time.
The most I've seen of it is just from clips in the Robert Evans documentary.
Yeah, that's some other generation's Disturbia, where you look back and are like, why do we all like this so much? This has not stood the test of time.
But I didn't want to talk about Mandy Patinkin, because I love Mandy Patinkin
so
much.
And I just found out he's not British.
He's not British at all. No. Like, I was shocked to find
out. I know nothing about him outside of The Princess Bride. And, so.
But apparently he does accents.
With those two roles, he's Inigo Montoya in Princess Bride and Hugh in The Simpsons, he's... I think with only those two roles, he's like one of the greatest pop culture beings of all time.
But more importantly, he's in Criminal Minds.
That's looking at his IMDb. I'm like, what is Mandy Patinkin famous for? Like Homeland?
Well, he did. Yeah,
the translation of Castle in the Sky. Like, what the fuck?
He did Chicago Hope and was killed off on it because he was being difficult behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But where he got famous first was on Broadway.
Yay!
But he's an amazing singer. His biggest things on Broadway were Evita and Sundays in the Park with George. I'm so jealous. A few years ago, friends of mine saw an evening with Patti LuPone and Mandy Patinkin where they sing all their big hits, and they were co-stars in Evita, and they sang their Evita songs.
But what if Mandy Patinkin were a horse?
That's why I know who he is.
Exactly. Mr. Show joke.
This sent me directly into watching Run, Ronnie, Run, because outside of Princess Bride and this, that's the only thing I know Mandy Patinkin from, and I've seen some of Homeland.
Well, I do want I want listeners to hear one of his version of Over the Rainbow is beautiful. Give it a listen here.
Much better.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of
once in a lullaby.
Oh, love it. You can hear a little
he's
human
no
there.
Liza, but he'll do.
Just, oh,
that's how he does the Mr. Show.
I do want to point out, I think
you're
it's obvious.
Not brutalizing.
But Hugh Parkfield, the name, obviously referencing Hugh Grant, mm-hmm. a very popular romantic comedy star at the time. In a few months, he would pick up a sex worker, and that would be his new identity for a few years as the shameful guy who cheated on Elizabeth Hurley.
Was that 1995? Wow.
It was 95, June of 95.
I thought Hugh Grant would die with that haircut. That Hugh has, because he had it for so long in every single movie he was in.
Yeah, I mean, Hugh Parkfield's hair is Hugh Grant's mm-hmm. hair.
And then in 2003, he spiked it up. Yes. He cut it short. Mm-hmm. He basically, I think, still has the same haircut he had in Bridget Jones' Diary. I also like that Divine, she got rich off that. She got to be in porn and be hosting all this stuff. She got to good make some money off of that. I'm glad.
Real sex worker money. Yeah.
The downside of that, all of this is that this made Jay Leno number one on late night.
Yep.
Forever.
Yeah.
Forever beating
Letterman.
But then
on, everybody was always on his show first instead of the other way around.
I hate that factoid.
Yeah. All thanks to him luckily getting him.
All thanks to Hugh Grant's pickle.
Thanks to him being in L.A. That's all it was.
Yeah, he always would get it first, but man.
I was just giving her a ride home, I swear.
Well, meanwhile, Mandy Patinkin, he's a New York star. He was on lots of Letterman stuff. There was him. There's a fun one of him singing Over the Rainbow on Letterman, too, with him goofing around, but just that's a better version.
Inigo Montoya. Yes. That's how the only other way
for
most
straights,
of you...
For straights, that's who's the most famous for.
You straightsies. Yes. Oh, wait,
I'm
one of those.
Saying the gays don't like Princess Bride, one of the greatest movies of all time?
Sure, they
he totally steals that movie, too.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's kind of his movie.
And he is that group, Andre the Giant, and Inigo Montoya, and
Wallace Shawn. Inconceivable.
He is really good in this episode. Really, really good.
Excellent.
Like, more subtle than most guest performances.
Mm-hmm. And had no idea it wasn't a real Brit, had no idea who Mandy Patinkin was. It's just a great character.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Sideshow Luke Perry. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time.
Also, Ecosystem of the Marsh by Thompson, as far as I can see, is not a real book. They just make it up.
And by 2010, soy-based snacks were much tastier than what they are in this episode, as a soy boy.
Yeah,
I prefer
seitan, jerky.
Though. So.
I just want to note that I really like Lisa's adult design.
Yeah.
They really did a nice job of aging her up.
They make it work by not making her look too... While still having hair that is also her skin color, they still make it work.
Yeah. But it's cute now. Yeah.
And she just looks more like a flower than ever before for some reason.
And then she must be getting like a master's or something, because she's like 23 and still in Harvard. So.
Hey, I got my degree at 26. It took me 7 years.
You're surprised that she's going to graduate school?
Oh, certainly not, no.
Her pearls are over her turtleneck, too. They kept her pearls as well.
Yeah, it's true. That almost seems like, I don't know, pearls over turtleneck, is that fashionable?
I don't think so, but you need the pearls.
But
it's
an iconic 2010. Maybe they were just assuming that maybe fashion will change a little bit.
Yeah, it's true. But yes, then they go on a couple dates. Which, this is a real dig at Jim Carrey, I gotta say.
I've never met anyone who so understood the magic of Jim Carrey.
He can make you laugh with no more than a frantic flailing of his limbs.
I can't believe how much we have in common. We're both studying the environment, we're both utterly humorless about our vegetarianism, and we both love the Rolling Stones.
Yes, not for their music, but for their tireless efforts to preserve historic buildings.
Lisa, I can't bear the thought of being apart from you all summer. Come back with me to Parkfield Manor.
I'd love to. Can we get vegetarian meals at your parents' house?
Yes, we can, Lisa.
That is good, because eating animals is wrong.
So very wrong.
When will the world learn?
I don't know. I just don't know.
That's so great. As much as I am annoyed by digs at vegetarians, that's a nice joke.
And yet she wasn't a vegetarian yet.
Well, she was in historic.
In the future she is.
I think this foreshadows her later vegetarian.
That's one of the bigger issues that you see Maude Flanders in 2010.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, but so Merkin is a vegetarian. I don't know if he was at this point in production or not.
I think so. So the Steel Wheelchair Tour was the poster in the background. The 2010 Rolling Stones Tour was actually called Ladies and Gentlemen, the Rolling Stones.
Oh.
So And they're still touring too.
They
right?
are, but it, yeah. The Steel Wheels tour.
Well, in 19- Steel Wheels was a, mm-hmm. an older tour then, mm-hmm. right?
Okay. Well, in 1995, the idea of the Rolling Stones still touring was utterly ludicrous.
Wow, you're right. That was a fucking joke that wasn't supposed to have come true.
Yeah. No way would they still be doing it 15 years from now. Instead, 22 years
and
later,
didn't
they
do the Super Bowl at some point, relatively recently?
Jesus Christ, so. Yeah. That was supposed. But you think that was a dig at Jim Carrey?
Well, the dig is that within 15 years he would have made 40 films that would all be considered classics. So the point is, he was making too many movies.
Yes.
And then also the idea of, like, he can make you laugh with nothing but the flailing of his limbs, which means he overacts and tries too hard.
I think they're pointing out he is Lisa's generation's Jerry Lewis.
Yes.
And this was before the Truman Show.
This is pre-Truman Show, but it's also a reference to 1994, and we've talked about this so much in 302010. I don't know that we'll see a bigger celebrity in our lifetime than Jim Carrey. 1994, he was in, like, February, Ace Ventura, summer, The Mask, December, Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
Three insane. So in 1 year, he went from being a guy who was on this TV show that no one seemed to care about for 4 years to the biggest star in the fucking world.
Yeah.
The biggest payday anybody's ever been paid for a movie in 1 year.
Cable guy.
Yeah. These writers are in the biz. They probably knew what he was going to be in 1995 as well. He's in five 1995 movies too. So it's like, when will this ever end? It ended probably after the Man on the Moon, I would say.
13?
Well, kind of.
Like, hype died after Man on the Moon.
Well, but he did Liar Liar as kind of his return.
That was pre-Man on the Moon.
It is.
97.
Okay. But he's kind of gone in and out of stuff. Sorry, Irene was. Yeah, that was post-Man on the Moon.
That was the one that, like, people kind of went, man, he sure is going weird, isn't he? And then a lot of the movies that he made post-Me, Myself, and Irene, there was Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind amazing.
It's great, but it has nothing to do with Jim Carrey.
That's an outlier, sort of like Punch Drunk Love for Adam Sandler.
That's a great film to watch on Valentine's Day.
Where we sit now, that Netflix documentary, Jim and Andy's about to premiere, and we can see the moment Jim Carrey knocks something loose in his head, which I love who he's become. I love Jim Carrey now, this weird zen-like, fuck does this even matter?
What, none of this matters.
He is a broken
pointless.
Man.
It doesn't seem broken. It's just like, what more does he need?
Recently, I think I might have something. A long-time girlfriend committed suicide. Not that he's at fault.
I watched his art documentary, and I just love...
He's also an anti-vaxxer, though.
Is he? I thought he was.
He wrote a whole thing on Huffington Post about it many years
ago. All right, I'll stop exalting Jim Carrey.
I hope
he's
recanted.
Lovely.
By 2010, he did have 40 credits to his name. Though that counts TV and movies, not 40
Are we counting Once Bitten?
Or that Duck Show? What was that?
Duck Factory.
Factory, yeah. All six episodes, all the time. David Merkin said that it was not a knock at Jim Carrey, but I think that's what he says. That's what he'd say on a 2006 commentary.
I think it was tongue-in-cheek. Like, I love Jim Carrey. He's great.
He only makes good movies.
Like I said about the Seinfeld reference, is acknowledging another phenomenon that's happening during The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it as positive or negative. I kind of wish they went one way or the other.
I also love the gag that the wacky old designs for planes, those are the futuristic planes are the old planes.
That plane is straight out of, like, stock footage you would see of crazy flying machines.
And then we find out that the Parkfields are landed gentry. They are the Mr. Darcy of Pride and Prejudice.
Ooh, la-di-da. Yeah.
Beautiful dinnerware, Mrs. Parkfield.
Thank you, Lisa. They were made for the finest family in Britain.
I don't know how we ended up with them.
Uh-oh. Should I laugh? Is that dry British wit or subtle self-pity? Ooh, they're staring at me. Better respond. Ha 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 ha.
Oh, it's good to hear a boisterous American laugh.
And I love that painting. Judging by the clothes, I'd say 17th century.
Actually, Lisa, it's just Uncle Eldred.
Oh, get me brain medicines from the National Health.
Socialized medicine, everybody. Yeah. I want to point out that in the title, The Secret of NIM, NIM stands for National Institute of Mental Health, because rats were experimented on.
Wow.
That's not a joke.
Love that you had that in your brain.
It's the truth. People need to know.
But why would the government pay to take care of people's mental health? That's everyone else's responsibilities but the government.
That guy should be living alone with a gun.
Exactly. He should have all the guns he wants. That's his prescription.
I very much relate to Lisa meeting her... potential British in-laws, because I work for a company that is owned by a British company, and yes, her sister site is Eurogamer, so I interact with a lot of British people, and occasionally they will say a thing, and I'll be like, is that meant to be funny? I think that's supposed to be funny. They're looking at me. Oh, crap.
You wonder if it's a joke. Chris and I worked a lot with British dudes.
They had to hire someone to, like, take out obscure Britishisms when the articles came
Massive self-deprecation is a big thing with them.
They're beer drinkers. I like that.
Yeah, they all are like, well, why aren't you going to a pub after work?
But this they don't just drink. I mean, whenever I go there, by the third day in a row of heavy drinking, I'm like, okay, I'm done, guys. It actually makes me tired.
I used to work with Kat, and we went to a wine bar. We were just having dinner or whatever with our bosses, and I was like, oh, I'm at a wine bar. I just want to get a beer. Will I be looked down upon? And like one of the head honchos showed up and he ordered a beer. I was like, okay, this is good. I respect the Brits now.
I remember the Brit we worked with that we joked with him about how British he was, and then he said like, oh no, when I go back to England, all my friends make fun of me for being too Americanized, and I think all their accents sound crazy now to me because I've heard it. I've been too Americanized. But I think that's one of Yardley's best acting ever. Like, ha, 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 ha.
I think it was an excellent impression of a baby ox.
Lisa versus Mo, vote in the comments.
I've just been in that kind of feeling of the non-committal laugh at something like, ha, 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 ha.
Yes, we've done a lot of podcasts together.
Yeah. Oh, come on now. Also, Kat, did you like how every communicator watch is a Star Trek sound? Like, there's Star Trek sounds
and
everywhere.
And Jetsons noises.
Every car makes a Jetsons noise.
Even though they're still just regular cars.
With all the
The Star Trek is becoming the future. So much of Star Trek has like actually come true. Next thing you know, we're going to have warp drive.
Yeah, I hope
just
so.
Knock on wood.
Scary.
I can't wait. That BART is too slow.
We can conquer every other planet and strip them for their resources. Mm-hmm. But him proposing to Lisa is a lovely scene, especially the very visual, so there's no clip of it, of just the writing out in text of like, it gets longer and longer, doing me the honor of the holy tradition of
Matrix.
And then the cow would marry me on it.
They just shove the cow.
And then it just kills two more robots. Yeah. Like, it was beautiful.
Absolutely reflective of the character of Hugh, where he would say way too much with his fireworks.
Yeah, it's true.
Very, too proper.
Like, calm it down, Hugh. Like, be a little less proper, yes. And then we get another great prediction of stuff. Like, this is being on FaceTime with someone over 50.
Yeah, right? I think the 90s predicted, like, you will always be on a video phone. But now that we have that capability, dude, it's like, I never want to be on.
So that's what I love about it, because everybody's wrong. I do love this version of the future, though. If they hadn't put 2010 in, we'd have no complaints.
Yeah,
it's just a fun version of the future. This could be any year. Yeah. It'd be great. But I love that, yes, every future predicts video phone calls. We all have smartphones. Not only do none of us want to do a video, no one wants to do a voice call. Everybody wants to text an email. Would prefer text and email.
Oh, a phone call. You're either my mom or someone's dead.
Or you're like overseas and we can't talk.
I don't know. A lot of teenagers be hanging out on FaceTime, like talking with one another and stuff.
A lot of couples. I know that for sure. And that my uncle, who flies planes to like Shanghai, does it with his family all the time. But I think everybody overestimated how much we wanted to look at one another during a phone call.
It's true. And the one thing they could never predict is that we would always be looking at our phones.
Yes.
I think it was too much of a depressing proposition from the 90s.
I'm thinking about the framing, because Marge's fingers, it's like, even on FaceTime, you wouldn't see my hands.
Yeah, no. Marge is far back from her picture phone.
Yes.
No, of course, never predicted that smartphones would become a thing, and it is a proper phone where they were telling her to get off the phone. She's tying up the phone line.
It's an actual cord. Phone, Yeah, Maggie even has a cord.
Hi, Mom.
Lisa, hello. How are you doing in England? Remember, an elevator is called a lift, a mile is called a kilometer, and botulism is called steak and kidney pie.
Guess what? You and I are getting married.
All right! Lisa, that's wonderful. If only your father was still with us. But he left for work a few minutes ago.
Mom, remember when I was little, we'd always plan my dream wedding, and you always promised to, keep Dad from ruining it?
Oh, don't worry, honey. I guarantee your father will behave.
Mom, it's a picture phone.
This? Oh, no. I just got a touch of the rheumatiz.
Oh. Mom, picture phone.
Just that pregnant pause on Homer to let the viewer think for 2 seconds Homer's dead in this future.
Like a lot of Merkin jokes, it only works once, but it is shocking when you hear it. Like, what, Homer's dead in the future?
This is where the gags start to be the fan service of, oh man, what happened to so-and-so?
Yeah.
And that's when we get to see how, well, first we get the great misdirect of, you see the establishing shot of a building, you see Bart in a business suit, and then they pull back like, no, he's smashing down the building.
And it's supposed to be a fake tuxedo t-shirt, but it's not drawn. It's hard to convey that with animation. Like, I'm wearing a drawing of a tuxedo on a t-shirt.
It does not read that way, but it's funny. But I'd say Yardley doesn't have to change your voice too much to be grown-up Lisa. Bart, unfortunately, it's a problem for me.
It's jarring, and I love it.
They electronically changed it.
It is shifted, yes. Oh. Yeah.
They definitely lowered it.
What happened to Milhouse?
Woohoo! Oh, Marge, that's great news!
Hey, hey there with a personal call, Simpson.
Oh, but Mr. Milhouse, my little girl's getting married.
Lisa? Oh, my one true love.
Huh.
Flashback.
It's not you, Milhouse. I just don't plan to ever get married.
I think I'll write your performance evaluation now, Simpson.
Well, we do find out that Lisa and Milhouse did do the Dirty Dingo
later
in this episode.
They did do it. Milhouse doesn't count. But
Mr. Milhouse might be my favorite two words of this whole show.
Mr. Milhouse.
Mr. Milhouse. And I did not notice until the clip. I noticed the Star Trek door sounds, but that's just the bridge.
It's the original inside series the safety bridge. Room. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. But poor Milhouse, like, he's bald at 26. Like, he's bald.
Everybody's bald.
He looks 40 at the age of 26.
Every male character has like either a patch of baldness or has gone completely bald or the hair's receding.
I wonder if it's a statement on radiation in the city.
I think it's just the easiest way to age up characters.
Meanwhile, Homer's boss is literally half his age.
But I love that joke.
And it's Milhouse. Milhouse is his boss.
Lenny and Carl are in the office. They have fancier jobs now, and Homer is just the same place.
Hey, Burns is right. He is there forever.
Yes,
in the same place.
It's true.
Hey, but I would kill to have a job that I can keep for like 30 years at this point.
Yeah.
Someone who's as...
a little bit of job security probably gets benefits.
That is a total 90s joke. Like, what if you had a job forever?
Oh,
wouldn't that fucking suck? Fight Club, everybody.
I also love the sign gag. Still operating thanks to lengthy appeals process.
Yes.
Such a great gag. They say it on the commentary, but it's so clever to have flashback within a flash forward. Mm-hmm. Homer wants to plan the wedding himself. He's got so many great ideas.
Will that girl ever shut up? Okay, Marge, I'll plan everything. We can have the reception at Moe's. Wait, why not have the whole wedding there? We'll do it on a Monday morning. There'll be fewer drunks.
Homer, don't take this personally, but I've obtained a court order to prevent you from planning this wedding.
Where is Homer Simpson? Well, he seemed to be in order. I'll be up back in the hammock.
He just gives up immediately.
That was very nice of Homer to be like, well, I can't fight this.
Yep, he's all seem to be in order. And they deny you Maggie's voice this entire episode.
That is a great joke because that could be a huge reveal. Like, what does Maggie sound like?
And in the future, other future episodes, she's never talked. They always keep her from talking in those too. Even in the lame-ass Native American one.
Oh, Bart to the Future?
Yeah.
That predicted Trump?
Yeah.
Like when they take the, well, crap, we have to figure out what Maggie's going to sound out. Why don't we just turn it into a joke that she never talks?
Mm-hmm. And I also like that they're having to be old parents who are like, they're in their 50s, but they got a 16-year-old. They're like, oh, we don't want to be parents anymore. The other two are gone. Ugh. But that also lets Maggie be a little hellion, as they talk about later in it. And so we get to find out what happened to Mr. Burns, which I love this joke. So, is this line of the show?
For me, it is.
But who killed Mr. Burns?
Mr. Smithers plus guest. There's only one person I would want to bring. Oh, Mr. Burns will thaw you out the second they discover the cure for 17 stab wounds in the back. Yeah. How are we doing, boys?
Well, we're up to 15.
Yay! That is great. Let's do it.
That's the joke.
It's weird. Like, maybe Marge has mellowed out in her old age, but it's weird that she would invite Smithers, who was an accessory to Mr. Burns trying to destroy their life multiple times.
That's true. Yeah. In this future, perhaps Smithers has befriended them more, and they're like, well, we... If this is the future after Homer the Smithers, then I guess they've been warmed up to him. So.
That's true,
But that, I just, again, wonderful misdirect. Do you think that he had a disease, he had something? It's like, no, someone stabbed him in the back 17 times.
I like the idea of a cure for being stabbed in the back.
Yes.
And that they've solved 15 of the stab wounds, but not the last two.
We're up to 15. And that he's been in a tube since then, which means, like, he was immediately stabbed. stabbed in the back by someone. He was stabbed in the back, then immediately shoved in the tube.
It's a very Walt Disney joke.
Yes, yeah. And I feel, though, sad for Smithers that he's been pining away at this frozen burns this entire for 15 years or something. But
the next clip is also one of my favorite lines, because it was cut for syndication.
Mm.
It's the one that gets cut because it's, I guess, not that necessary.
The school stuff's not that... The school stuff with Skinner and Lovejoy isn't that funny. Mm-hmm. Neither is, I don't think, I didn't get it. The Martin clip's not that funny to me either.
But it contains a line I say every day, like every other podcast.
Now turn to the next problem. Mm. If you have three Pepsis and drink one, how much more refreshed are you? You, the redhead in the Chicago school system?
Pepsi?
Partial credit.
Partial credit.
Partial credit.
I say every time somebody gets something half right.
Our corporate partial dystopia credit. School system.
That was kind of right,
yeah.
I got to say.
Well, I thought I remember Doonesbury predicting that in a series of comics, that instead of classrooms, we'd have cable channels devoted to subjects.
Well,
and that's...
It definitely was the trajectory that we were on in 95 and continue to be on of underfunded schools, shrinking classrooms with growing class sizes. And then the teachers wouldn't even teach anymore, because why do that? A TV can just do that.
And when I was growing up, Pepsi and other soda companies would subsidize some of that cost at the cost of constant advertising and, you know, delivering poisoned coffee to young people on a regular basis, which I think they've kind of curbed
a little bit.
There was a big backlash to putting all the Coke machines in schools and Pepsi machines in schools.
Perhaps so, but I mean, also the charter schools aren't the answer, by the way, kids. Don't believe that.
I do want to reference the Martin Prince clip. He turns into sort of the Phantom of the Opera living under the school.
It's so good.
And instead of playing like Beethoven or Bach, he's playing Walter Murphy's A Fifth of Beethoven. In case you don't know who Walter Murphy is, he's done a lot of stuff. But you might know him best for the music and theme to Family Guy.
Really?
It's this Walter Murphy.
Wow,
I read a great article about that he lives in an RV traveling around the country scoring Family Guy in that RV.
What?
Yes. So this is Walter Murphy's A Fifth of Beethoven.
It's pretty funky.
So we get a 70s reference in the 2010s.
Yeah, pretty like that.
All I can imagine is Peter Sellers leaving his millionaire's home. I have no other place to say it, but I want to do something with you guys, because last night, the Family Guy Simpsons crossover was on Adult Swim. Watched it, and the joke, you mentioning the Emmys made me... Homer and Peter get in a fight, and Homer just lifts up this shield of Emmys and starts throwing that Peter Griffin. He's like, hey, that's not fair. I don't have any of those.
That's good.
But I want to torture both of you somehow in the near future.
It's an hour long. It's
45 minutes without commercials.
I have hate watched that before, and it's miserable, and I
remember
I hate
Stewie
it.
Doing a rape threat to Mo.
And that whole awful fight. It's bad. It's bad, folks.
Yeah. Well, because it's a Family Guy episode with Simpsons in it. It was produced by the Family Guy people.
Going through the Simpsons with a fine-tooth comb and watching how Family Guy stages the Simpsons, and how like the kitchen's in the wrong spot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is so weird, but all the voices are right. It's so strange. And yes, someday, maybe for charity, I'll torture you guys.
I will die after that podcast.
So I like that Otto started his own business while Quimby has been indicted, and Muhammad Jafar is quite a good name for him, his fake name.
This is definitely one of those jokes where you have to be a Simpsons viewer to know who Quimby is and why he's fallen from grace. Like, it's not like, oh, hey, former Mayor Quimby, what are you doing in that taxi cab?
And that it's an upswing for Otto to be in charge of his own taxi company.
Yeah. Good for Otto. I mean, he really got it together after just kind of hanging out on a mattress somewhere, smoking pot.
Holding mustard?
Holding his own against Uber.
Well, Uber had, I bet, in 2012, he got shut down by Uber pretty soon. But Lisa is super nervous about Hugh meeting the family, which she is rightly so. But this U.S. hospitality, the way through a joke, they get away with burning a country's flag and stomping on it and putting shit all over
Seinfeld.
Seinfeld did not get away with this, and it's the same fucking joke.
Well, it's different when you do Puerto Rico versus...
Suppose.
Also, it's live action versus a cartoon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Here they come! Raise the flag! Oh, Lisa!
Yo, Hugh! Here's a little bit of U.S. hospitality! What do you think of that?
Dad!
Ah!
Now throw compost on it!
Enjoy.
Oh. It's still warm.
You can easily misread Homer's "Yo, Hugh!" Yes. As sinister. Like, look what we did.
Here's some American hospitality for you. We burned your flag. Like, just, it also, Marge says, throw compost on him!
Yeah. I'm so, all I can think of now with all these fucking symbolists is like, Hugh, you're such a fucking baby. Who cares? Who cares? Your flag's on fire.
Why are you crying?
He probably has a bust of Margaret Thatcher in his house.
Yeah, I would bet his family are total Thatcherites. He's the rich liberal of the family.
This is not who I think Hugh is.
He still is. As revealed by the end of the episode, he's a very classist guy. Mm-hmm. Like, he's an upper class guy who's the common people song all over again.
It's weird. Yeah, there's a lot of class in this episode, and it only comes up at the end. But like, why would Lisa fall for this guy? They are such different people, and he is clearly like wrapped up in
early 20s.
It's true.
They're in college.
Clearly their affair is at best a year long.
Well, it sounds like they meet kind of near the beginning of the school year.
They burn pretty hot.
And then he says, I can't bear to leave you at the beginning of the summer. So, you know, several months. And
they're getting married in August 1st. So
it's reflective of the fact that maybe this wedding isn't such a great idea by the fact that he asks her to marry him like less than a year into the relationship before he's met her family.
Mm. Yeah.
Not a great idea to propose before meeting your in-laws.
Yeah. Don't get married before 40, everybody.
It's absolutely not. But that, I think at this time, especially when people were getting married a little earlier, that college was where you did that.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a lot of stories like that. That's how my parents, I think, did it.
Yeah, but there was also like, you're marrying your high school sweetheart. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they're getting married too early. I'm saying that they barely know one another.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
There's a great joke about Homer's lack of craftsmanship in this episode where they're staying in an addition to the house. But like every exterior shot of the house, you can see he's built more than one addition onto the house. So
it's just a hideous house next to all these beautiful future houses. It's just him with terrible things built on the side.
It looks like the first thing you'd shoot in a video game.
It's like, now that he has an empty nest, he's working on like hobbies or whatever.
So, it makes a lot of sense in light of what he did to the foundation.
Yes, oh, that's true. I like too that just how Hugh just rolls with the punches. I was like, be a dude, draw a bath. And he is appalled to see the Simpsons eating too.
So Hugh, have you heard all the latest American jokes? Here's a good one. Pull my finger.
Yes, we have that one in England too, Mr. Simpson.
I said pull my finger.
Mom, we've got my wedding dress fitting this afternoon. Maggie, if you're not doing anything, why don't you come with us?
Maggie, don't talk with your mouth full.
Me and Bart will take you out on the town this afternoon.
Hugh should take it easy because of his fall.
Oh, Lisa, please. The only thing bruised in that fall was my spine. I'll be delighted.
Great. There's only one thing I ask in return.
Certainly.
Pull my finger.
He does have a very posh accent. Sorry.
I was going to say, this is the first time in a while we've heard the eating from everybody.
The chomping,
just Homer. It's everybody.
Yeah.
But it is a very upper class accent. I assume Andy Patinkin would know which one to pick.
Well, yeah, he lives in a castle.
Yes.
He's quite rich.
He's got an estate.
Yes. And having a lot of land, that's even more so than money to show that you're old money in England. Of just like, oh, we have an estate, lots of land, when there's not... There isn't lots of land in England to have to actually have that much space is a
They're not
big.
That far from London. That place is, and given how much money real estate costs around that kind of area.
Yeah.
Mm.
I also did love the line right before that where Bart says that he's working on his aggression before law school.
Yeah.
Because it would fit with the timeline that he will be a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah.
Which is undone by other ones, especially him being a stoner loser in Bart to the Future.
So he still hasn't seen the Itchy and Scratchy movie yet.
Yeah, he still
hasn't. Timeline.
I want that timeline to exist. I didn't like him being a wannabe Jimmy Buffett. Was just too much of a bummer.
Yeah,
like,
I don't like it.
I don't like that Bart would be that bad off. It's just too... There are absolutely dudes like that, but I don't like Bart becoming that.
It's too dark. I like that he's pursuing his passion, which is destruction, in a positive way.
I'd say the one clunker joke in this episode is that wrong side of the road joke. I'm like, I feel like I've seen this gag in 18 different movies. I get it. But, all right, this list of celebrities. I got them here if you want to read them off.
Let's do it.
Okay, so the list. Actually, let's hear the clip, and then I'll read off the list.
And tonight, the following celebrities have been arrested, while Heather Locklear-Fortensky remains at large. Remember, if you see any celebrities, consider them dangerous.
You know I rather like this, Pop.
Oh, an English boy, eh? You know, we saved your ass in World War II.
Yeah, well, we saved your ass in World War III.
That's true.
Hugh, there's something I want you to have. My dad gave me his cufflinks to wear on the day I married Marge, and they brought us good luck. I couldn't imagine a happier marriage. We don't have many traditions in our family, but it'd mean a lot to me if you kept this one alive.
Well, I'd be honored to wear those things.
So, before the list, can I unpack the Fortensky joke?
That's so ridiculous. I can't believe that's has any basis
you,
in
reality. Go ahead, Chris. Like, do you know it?
Yeah, it's a reference to Elizabeth Taylor's seventh husband.
And last husband.
And last
the
husband.
Final husband.
A lowly construction worker she met in rehab.
Yeah.
And so then that guy married Heather Locklear,
that's,
I guess.
With making it one of the most brilliant jokes no one will ever fucking
yeah,
get.
They were married from 91 to 96, so this is somewhat recently in time. Like, okay. It was a scandal. It was on a bunch of tabloid magazines, but
so
yeah.
I think one of her... fourth or sixth husband was just the first husband or the second husband. She married one dude twice, didn't she?
I think Heather Locklear is...
Non-consecutive husbands?
Yes.
I think she's still with the guy from Bon Jovi, the other guy from Bon Jovi.
I totally forgot his name.
Yeah, but I just remember she was with that guy because she was asked by Triumph the Infantile Comic Dog what it was like to be with Tommy Lee and his giant penis, and then she says, well, every band guy I've been with has a giant penis, just like this guy.
And,
like,
he asked if Richie Sambora feathered his pubes.
That's right, yes.
Feathered his pubes.
Feathered his pubes.
I like that this is the second episode of Talking Simpsons to talk about Tommy Lee's giant penis.
Yeah! Yeah! Welcome, Kat.
In every episode. I don't know how.
It's hard to avoid. Okay, so here's the list of celebrities that are still at large. The Baldwin Brothers Gang, Dr. Brad Pitt, John Kennedy, George Burns, still alive, Infamous Amos, Grandson of Sam, the artist formerly known as Symbol, the Prince Symbol.
Symbol Boy.
Tim Allen Jr.
I love it.
Senator and Mrs. Dracula, the artist formerly known as Buddy Hackett, Madonna Bots Series K, Sideshow Ralph Wiggum,
wow.
Martha Hitler, and Johnny Neutrino. Wow. Those are the celebrities.
Sideshow Ralph Wiggum. I want to know the story.
That's
there.
That's an interesting feature. Yeah,
yeah. I like
and also,
it.
Did John Kennedy breed before he flew a plane into something? Or
I feel like he had a kid.
I didn't think so.
It's kind of dark,
like,
actually.
A super bachelor.
Well, there's several jokes this episode of like, well, that person's dead. That person's
and,
dead.
Mo lost an eye somehow.
Yes, perhaps in World War III, which hasn't come yet, but we're trying.
Yeah.
We're trying, man. Though I guess England did not save our ass in the Iraq War. Like they helped us in being terrible together.
And boy, Hugh is a real piece of shit, I think, after this moment.
Yeah.
Just like, it's such a token thing you could do for Lisa, but it's like you can't break your upper classness to
it
just...
It makes him look too ugly.
Yeah.
It's like, but I spent all this money on this suit, and you will make me
but
look
But not
bad.
Only that, but he thinks it's okay to look totally down on Lisa's family because she gave him kind of emotional permission to do so because she was very embarrassed by them.
I think he can... He throws... It is pretty cruel later how he throws it back. And like, you complain as much as anybody. and then...
I think it's the one thing this episode doesn't predict is social media.
Oh,
because of social media... Nobody in the fucking world would reject pig cufflinks.
Yeah, you share it on your Instagram.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look adorable. Get a bunch of likes.
He'd be on all over Reddit.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
He'd be all over Reddit.
In general, people didn't realize how destructive and all-encompassing social media would be in the future. Like, that would be the true enemy. Though this did predict VR making a comeback.
Yeah.
True.
And virtual pool. I didn't have the clip because the sound is too horrible. him pressing the button and torturing them.
Fall to the floor. It's great.
And then, this actually would be my line in the show. We had already done it.
You know, Fox turned into a hardcore sex channel so gradually, I didn't even notice. Yeesh.
Complete with the 70s porn music.
Yes,
I wish that was the case.
I think that's my favorite dig at Fox that they do in the Simpsons.
Yeah, I like that. It's one of my favorite ways to just say how bad things happen so gradually you don't even notice. I love that phrasing. It's better than... Frog soup is the classic way of saying it, that if you dunk a frog and immediately turn up the water all the way, the frog's going to jump out of hot water. If you put him in cold water and slowly warm it up, he'll be boiled to death. So that's how something can change so gradually you won't even notice. That's more FX is actually the hardcore.
I still think America's
not even that.
Got so many hang-ups with sex. Television is losing viewers so rapidly. I would love someone to embrace sexuality. And
replace
just,
Fox with Game of Thrones.
Something, just something like that. Like, look, fuck what the FCC says. We're doing nudity.
Yes.
We're showing sex.
On
we,
a
need, we need viewers. I don't. Why wouldn't
we need
it?
To get over the sex stuff
totally.
More so than
I
violence?
I mean, we already
like,
have. It's called Game of Thrones.
I know, but like the UK has like prescription sex over the air every single night.
Well,
everybody jerk off. Calm down and yeah. watch a little bit of this.
And then have a spot of tea.
The old in out, and then go to bed.
We did learn that after Mo's Bar, they apparently tried to rob a porn warehouse, and they hid in a dumpster.
That's
so
it.
Maybe he was a little right to hate the family, but
he
I don't
has
know.
A good reason to be upset about
if
that.
I'm at The Simpsons, I'd be like, oh my god, these are my in-laws? Okay.
When speaking of sex, I like that it's not treated as a big deal that Lisa sleeps in the same bed as her fiancé.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like even 3 years earlier, they would have been like, I don't know, Lisa is supposed to be a good girl. She doesn't sleep with her fiancé. Like,
well,
they should be clean until marriage.
We know she's not a virgin.
That's true.
Lisa, I can't believe it's your wedding day already.
Mom, I feel kind of funny wearing white. I mean, Milhouse.
Oh, Milhouse doesn't count.
Okay, I've got something old. That's my pearl necklace. Something new is the wedding dress. Something borrowed is this antique brooch from Hugh's mother. And I just need something blue.
Here.
Oh, Mom, thanks.
That is so sweet. My God.
And like the third touching. Consecutive lock of Marge's hair joke.
Yeah, in Star Is Burns, Homer chops off a huge chunk of her hair, and just you and me now, lock of hair.
It's monstrous. This is a tiny strand of it.
It's
but
more
I,
reasonable.
And I like the subtle darkening of, lightening of Marge's hair in this episode, too, in her design. Same with Homer, that he has one hair on the top of his head, and his M is gone. It's just loose hair.
His M is broken up.
And also his Jetsons shirt, this George Jetson shirt. Is pretty
that's
great
right.
too.
Jetson's reference.
And but yes, Lisa's first time was with Milhouse, which like ugh, boy.
I just realized they don't address Santa's Little Helper or Snowball 2 if they ever had any more dogs after that or any more cats.
That would be that's a depressing
that's the next episode.
They're the worst pet owners in the universe, so I hope not.
Yeah, that's true. Well, also though, later in that was one thing I did like in the 2011 future episode that implied Lisa in college experimented and even had a girlfriend briefly among other boyfriends.
Yeah.
But we go to the cheap showiness of nature and we see that Frink is crossbred with Blinky at some point.
I think of that showiness of nature line at every outdoor wedding I'm at.
Yep.
In the cheap showiness of nature.
And it's pretty depressing that Bart's been divorced twice by age 25. I knew friends who were like, had been divorced twice by 22.
Yikes.
That
sounds like
Florida
to me.
Yeah. Hey, come on. That's Youngstown, Ohio, too.
It's true. It's the Florida of Northeast Ohio.
And also, Homer meeting the Parkfields was great, too. Just the fear that Hugh has, like, okay, that's not so bad.
And it's Dan Castellaneta meeting himself.
So,
yes,
it took me literally years for my partner's parents to meet my own parents.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, because
I can't imagine that.
Long story, but they didn't meet until we had already moved to California, and this would have been like 2014 for various reasons, and I was so freaking nervous because they were very different. My partner's parents were hippies.
Oh, wow.
They smoked pot. They were very... They lived in the city. My parents are the definition of suburbanites. Mm. And they're not exactly... They're not exactly in this that kind of vein, but they're, you know, pretty conservative, right? So I was like, are they going to get along? Are they going to argue about politics? Am I going to want to die?
So weird.
No, they actually got along, which was even weirder because suddenly her father was saying, you know, you should listen to your father, Kat. He really has a lot of good ideas. I'm going, oh my God, no.
Oh, no. their parents cracking up at me.
United against you.
I never thought of that. My parents after 8 years have never met, but matchmaking for adults sounds like a fucking nightmare.
I've never had parents meet parents either. Oof. No, it's
when
terrifying.
My parents came into my office, it was like, you can't combine these two universes. Get them the fuck out of here.
Worlds are colliding.
Yes.
Yeah, well,
I like my boss more now.
My solution now, though, is when my parents come to visit, I go, why don't you go hang out with my girlfriend's parents? Bye.
That that octopussy line is great, too. Of all British things Homer could think of is a lesser James Bond film.
I must have seen it twice.
Then we get a depressing scene of seeing Edna and Maude still alive in the future, who are they're both dead in continuity now. They killed off Edna because of the voice actress.
But Patty is not yet gay.
Yes, no, that's true. Well, I mean...
You don't know that.
She can still want that... bouquet for a
Selma's
gay
the only, Selma's the only one who says it, right?
Oh, that's true. Mm. Yeah, that's true.
Wow, you know the difference.
I assume that Selma's always the one that wants to have a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Patty has the afro. Selma has like the split afro. That's how I know.
But then we see the guest of honor did make it. They must have found a cure for the 17th stab wound.
Hmm. Hey, Krabappo, you get in the way of that bouquet. I'll stuff that sun hat down your neck.
Smithers, take me home. I'm not fully defrosted.
Nonsense. Just sit down and rest for a moment. There you go. Oh, no. We've got a little situation here.
I didn't feel anything below my cummerbund.
So Mr. Burns dies at Lisa's wedding. Yes. There's no way he's bouncing back from this.
There's no repairing him from that. Yeah. But I just love Smithers, like, keep it under control kind of feeling. That's just just seeing Burns snap in half. Oh, it's beautiful. It's ridiculous, but beautiful. And then we get a very touching speech from Homer to Lisa.
Okay, so James L. Brooks is all over this dialogue, and I love it.
Lisa, we're not supposed to see.
Ooh la la.
Hi, Dad.
You look great, sweetheart.
Thanks.
Little Lisa Simpson. You know, I always felt you were the best thing my name ever got attached to. Since the time you learned to pin your own diapers, you've been smarter than me.
Oh, Dad.
No, let me finish. I just want you to know I've always been proud of you. You're my greatest accomplishment, and you did it all yourself. You helped me understand my own wife better and taught me to be a better person. But you're also my daughter. I don't think anybody could have had a better daughter than
Dad,
you.
Dad, you're babbling.
See? You're still helping me.
It's sweet, but still very stupid, which is a tricky thing to do with Homer.
And this is where the parallels with Lisa Substitute come in, because... In Lisa's Substitute, obviously, she meets someone with her own intellect, and that puts it in direct opposition to her
Homer,
father, right? So she comes to kind of resent her father, and, like, she really has a lot of trouble with it. And at the end of Lisa's Substitute, she ultimately comes to grips with the fact that she's a Simpson, and she can't escape that, and she finds some closure with her father, but not really. Like, they've just kind of... made amends.
It's more like settling.
Yeah. Settling into the idea that you're going to have to raise your father as much as he raises you.
Yep. But in this one, she, again, in direct conflict with her father, but her father, who in the past was always so judgmental or ignorant of her gifts, was always bagging on her, playing sax and everything, telling her to shut up. And this is especially in Lisa's Substitute. Here he's finally come to realize that she is better than him, that she's smarter, that she's wonderful, she has gifts, and... that is from the heart. Like, he recognizes this, and it's actually one of the sweetest moments in The Simpsons. And in that moment, there is emotional closure, and that is bookending what happened in Lisa's Substitute.
Wow,
I like this this really mellowed out Homer. Like, he really gets along with Bart in this episode. They're best buddies in this episode, always hanging out together and doing crimes.
I totally believe it because they're so similar.
Yeah. Once Bart could drink, he's like, oh, this unlocked all of our problems. We can just drink together.
By the way, I take no credit for the bookending Lisa's Substitute thing because somebody else wrote this. I thought, oh, wow, that's actually really amazing. But I wanted
to
relate
taking credit for it. It was me. I wrote it.
No, it is beautiful, and you get to see that Homer did grow and learn. I especially like him saying that he understood his wife better because in a previously written Greg Daniels episode of A Secrets of a Successful Marriage, that's literally what Lisa does for him. So that he can recognize that. But unfortunately, it's not a happy ending because she sees that he's wearing the cufflinks because Hugh decided not to wear them, and it all goes downhill once Lisa confronts him about that.
Lisa, we're not supposed to see each other before the wedding. It's tradition.
What about my family's tradition?
Surely you don't want me to wear those in front of my parents and their friends.
But you promised my dad you would.
I was just humoring him, darling. Actually, he frightens me a bit.
I know they look a little silly, but his feelings will be hurt if you don't wear them.
Fine. I must say you were right. This has been quite trying. You know, I've attempted to enjoy your family on a personal level, on an ironic level, as a novelty, as camp, as kitsch, as a cautionary example. Nothing works. Frankly, I'll be quite relieved when we get back to England and we won't have to deal with them.
Are you saying we won't see my family again?
Well, possibly your mother will come when the children are born.
I can't believe I'm hearing this. I don't want to cut my family out of my life.
Really? But Lisa, you're better than this place. You're like a flower that grew out of a pot of dirt.
That's a horrible thing to say.
Well, come on, you complain about them more than anyone.
Maybe, but I still love them. And I don't think you understand that.
Lisa, you dodged a bullet.
Yeah. He's so cruel in this scene. He's just like, I can't accept your family even as a joke. Like, even as a living joke, they irritate the shit out of me.
I could swallow it for 4 days, but that's it. And I will never talk to them again. Like, not even letting her invite her family when the children are born. Like, that's really...
Yes. Not only that, that's abusive.
Yes. We'll keep the children from your family.
To Kat's earlier point... Maybe you weren't ready to get married. You don't seem to know each other very well.
Yeah.
Well, do you?
Plan that he's going to like lock her up in England too. It's like, damn,
that was the
dude.
Plan.
Yeah.
By year four, I think they usually have a pretty good idea of what you're getting into with a person because by then you probably spent a lot of time together. Maybe you're living together and you get to see their personal habits and. You can only hide the other side of your personality for so long, and eventually the novelty will fade. And that is what we were starting to see. We saw the real side, perhaps, of Hugh's personality, which is, well, frankly, very classist, kind of cruel, very selfish.
I would forgive him for being a little disappointed with Springfield or thinking like, no, your family are freaks, but... Knowing that you have to accept them as part of her because Lisa doesn't hate them. She's also embarrassed by them, but she loves them. And you do kind of have to take the family with her. Like, it's not to say if you don't like your family, I totally am cool with you being done with them. I'm done with them too. Who cares? But if you do want them to be part of your life, then you kind of got to accept that as part of your partner's life too, you know?
I kind of understand the idea of like, family that you choose, being embarrassed by your family. I know that there are often times where I just kind of facepalm and go, oh my God, my family. Seriously. And like I said, I was kind of embarrassed to introduce them to my partner's family. But I don't know. It's maybe something a little different when someone starts telling me that they are garbage and that I... am like better than them, and I'm like going, hold on, you don't get to say that. Okay, that's not cool.
He calls them a cautionary example.
Cautionary example. So yes, the wedding is off.
Stop everything! The wedding has been called off.
This is very sad news. And it never would have happened if the wedding had been inside the church with God instead of out here in the cheap showiness of nature.
Who wants cake?
That's why you go to a wedding for the cake.
Mm-hmm. So Krusty is basically Groucho Marx in the 70s.
I was trying to peg what old celebrity looked
Groucho.
Like.
If you've seen Groucho in the interviews and Bill Cosby, he looks just like him. As in, he is a wilting man in a wheelchair.
With a beret. So we bring up the Gilbert Gottfried podcast on every episode of the show. One of Gilbert's best impressions is aging Groucho Marx. And it goes on forever.
Because he just tells pointless stories.
Yeah, it's sort of like a grandpa Simpson kind of thing.
And I like that Nelson apparently had a kid when he was like 20, and they're now laughing together, and just the...
Maybe even younger than that, like 16 or something, because that kid's like 8 or 9.
That's true. Well, though he was held back in school, you'd think. He seemed like he was 12 in Bart's grade.
He seems like the kind of guy who would have a kid at like 18 or whatever.
Yeah, if Bart's been divorced twice, you think he's probably...
Yeah, exactly.
He's had several baby mamas, but...
He invited a lot of assholes to the wedding.
Well, Lisa, in the future past, she will have a kind of a... Her first kiss will be with Nelson,
so that
might be why she invites him. Then we get the, honestly, quite heartwarming ending.
The next day, Hugh goes back to England, and you never see him again.
Wow. Now that I know all this, isn't there any way to change the future?
No, but try to look surprised.
She said you'd tell me about my true love.
Oh, you'll have a true love. But I specialize in foretelling the relationships where you get jerked around.
Lisa, where were you? You missed the most incredible thing.
Hi, Dad.
I ate 7 pounds of fudge.
Wow.
The man at the stand said it was a record.
Wow. What else did you do, Dad?
I rode the teacups. Then I got a little sick and I had to sit down. But then I rode them again.
That's so cute, yeah. It It's Lisa learning to accept Homer for who he is after seeing what happened in the future.
It's beautiful. And I just love the statement effect of like, no, you can't change it. That's exactly what happened. But act surprised.
Try to act
surprised. It's a weird hybrid of a dog and a baby who also pays your bills.
So yes.
Learn to live with it.
I also have to correct Lisa. She said she'd hear a story of her true love. No, she said first love.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I like how she catches the Esquilax and brings it back. It's a very cute thing. They didn't let the Esquilax die.
That's true. Oh, God, it's beautiful, too, Esquilax. Just her leaving the well, I just love the shot, too, of Lisa slowly backing away while the woman is still there just blankly staring at her after laughing and throwing a smoke grenade.
That's a great one-off character, the really weird psychic.
Yeah, it's so great. Just a heartwarming ending all around. I love that. I love that episode. You get
it's a classic.
So my favorite ever. Mr. X, and just like
they set the bar way too high for their future episodes. Their future episodes.
Their last future episode, Days of Future Future, was really good.
It's okay, but nothing can top.
Oh yeah, nothing can top
this. It's so well constructed, and they do such a great job with Lisa. And I'm a sucker for Lisa Homer episodes in general because. When it's a Lisa Homer episode, Homer starts to act more like a human being again, and he actually becomes kind of relatable. I love that relationship, and so I'm very fond of this.
They're
episode.
Emmy gold cats. The last one won an Emmy.
Yeah, this one did too.
Yeah.
And in light trivia, I was reading this reveals Lisa's middle name. It was Lisa Marie.
Marie, yeah.
Oh, I miss that. Yeah. That's cute.
You may know her better as Michael Jackson's former wife.
Yes.
I think there are very many Lisas that have the middle name Marie,
yeah,
and I'm
think
not
so
sure
too.
Why. Italians. I don't know. Italians?
Probably.
It's always the Italians.
It's always the Italians. And, I think they said the first time Lisa Simpson trended on Twitter was the date of this wedding in 2010. And I think 2010 is when season 25 was airing.
Yep.
Yeah, they go to the 2010 Olympics in London.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Holy shit.
So thanks for listening, everybody. This has been Talking Simpsons. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts, a classic gaming podcast, every Monday at Retronauts.com, or look for Retronauts in your podcast machine. I think I've said it a billion times. It's a classic gaming podcast. We've been around forever. And if you haven't heard of us, I say shame on you, sir or madam. But please listen. We would like you to listen. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And, this podcast turned into a Patreon so gradually I didn't even know this. And you should go to Patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons to support us there, and that support leads to us doing awesome things such as a live Talking Simpsons at SF Sketchfest.
Yes,
wow,
I'm gonna keep promoting this every episode until January 28th at 5:30.
Leave the room empty.
People will show up, and it's at the Piano Fight Bar, 5:30 p.m. on January 28th, 2018, in San Francisco.
I'll be there.
Yes, we have tons of friends who'll show up.
Listen, I can fill a room with Retronauts. I can fill a room with Talking Simpsons. Yes. I am the king of podcast panels.
I can't get 20 people to watch a YouTube video. I just have no faith in it.
Well, there's no beer being served there.
Yes.
So
SF Sketchfest is tons of fun. We're super honored to be part of it. So keep an eye out for that in January 28th.
And Kat, don't be like Hugh and come back again.
Because
I believe Hugh has never come back in any form.
Well, he's a made-up dude from the future.
And he's non-canon.
And the psychic was right. You'll never see him again.
Yep.
Don't worry. I'll keep inviting myself on. And in the meantime, you can find me on US Gamer, which is my day job. Mm-hmm. And I'm on Twitter at @_CatBot. Speaking of Retronauts, I should have some episodes coming up pretty soon. I spent one day recording like 3 in a row.
Yes,
so
if you fight on Twitter anymore, Kat, you're being deleted from Retronauts history.
Oh, no. My God.
Your
that's
legacy.
Terrifying.
Yes, I have Stalinist podcast tactics. I'm kidding.
Makes sense in a time-traveling episode. But, and you should also check out my other podcast, Axe of the Blood God, which is US Gamer's RPG podcast, which I host every week with Nadia on Fridays. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold.
Yes, and Laser Time, 302010, Video Game Apocalypse, all that bullshit. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week with 2 Dozen and 1 Greyhounds.